Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter number 21, text number 43. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mam vidate adhidate mam vikalpya apoyate tu aham etavam sarva veda artha shabda asthaya mam bhidam maya matram anuja ante pratishtya prasidati mam vidate vidyate mam vikalpya poyate tvaham etavam sarva vedartha shamda astayamam vedam maya matram manudhyante prasiddhya prasiddhi mam vidate vidate mam vikalpya bhayate tvaham etavam sarva vedartha shamda astayamam vidam maya matram manujyante prasiddhya prasiddhi mam me vidate enjoins in sacrifice avidate designates as the object of worship mam me vikalpya presented as alternate hypothesis apohiyate am refuted to also aham I etavam thus sarva veda of all the Vedas artha the meaning shabda the transcendental sound vibration asthaya establishing mam me vidam material duality maya matram as simply illusion anujya describing elaborately in different aspects ante ultimately prasidya negating prasidati becomes satisfied. Translation and purport of the followers of Srila Prabhupada. I am the ritualistic sacrifice enjoined by the Vedas, and I am the worshipable deity. It is I who am presented as various philosophical hypotheses, and it is I alone who am thus refuted, and who am then refuted by philosophical analysis. The transcendental sound vibration thus establishes me as the essential meaning of all Vedic knowledge. The Vedas elaborately analyzing all material duality as nothing but my illusory potency, ultimately completely negate this duality and achieve their own satisfaction. Purport. The Lord declared in the previous verse that He alone knows the ultimate purpose of the Vedas. And now, the Lord reveals that He alone is the ultimate basis and purpose of all Vedic knowledge. The Karmakanda section of the Vedas describes ritualistic sacrifices for promotion to heaven. Such sacrifices are the Lord Himself. Similarly, the Upasana Kanda section of the Vedas designates different demigods as objects of ritualistic worship, and these deities are not different from the Lord Himself, being expansions of the Lord's body. In the Jnana Kanda section of the Vedas, different philosophical methods of analysis are presented and refuted. Such knowledge which analyzes the potency of the Supreme Lord is not different from Him. Ultimately, Lord Krishna is everything, because everything is part and parcel of the Lord's multi-potencies. Although Vedic literature entices those absorbed in material duality to begin the Vedic way of life by offering them materially desirable rewards, the Vedas eventually refute all material duality by bringing one to the stage of God consciousness, when there is nothing different from the Supreme Lord. Within the Vedic literature, there are various injunctions stating that at a particular stage of life, one should give up fruit and rituals and take to the path of knowledge. Similarly, other injunctions declare that a self-realized soul should give up the path of speculative knowledge and take directly to the shelter of the Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead. But nowhere is there an injunction recommending that one should give up the loving service of the Lord, because that is the eternal constitutional position of every living entity. Different philosophical theses are presented and rejected in the Vedas, since one who is progressing must give up each previous stage in the advancement of knowledge. For example, one who is addicted to sex enjoyment is taught to accept religious marriage and enjoy sex pleasure with his wife. Such ritualistic knowledge is to be given up when one attains the stage of detachment, whereupon one is recommended to take the renounced order of life. In that stage of life, one is forbidden to see or speak with women. When, however, one reaches the perfection of Krishna consciousness, wherein the Lord is manifested everywhere, one may engage all living entities, including women, in the loving service of the Lord without danger of spiritual fall down. Thus, different injunctions based on progressive stages of spiritual vision are presented and refuted in Vedic literature. Since all such injunctions and processes are ultimately meant for the achievement of Krishna consciousness, the loving service of the Lord, they are not different from Lord Krishna Himself. The conditioned soul, therefore, should not prematurely stop his progressive march back to home, back to Godhead, by foolishly mistaking an intermediate or preliminary stage of advancement as the actual goal of life. One must understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the source, maintenance, and resting place of everything, and that every living entity is the Lord's eternal servant. In this way, one should continue on the Vedic path all the way back home, back to Godhead, for an eternal life of bliss and knowledge. And thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 11th canto, 21st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Krishna's Explanation of the Vedic Path. Vandeham. Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagra Jata Sagana Raghunatan Vita Tam Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Pada Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha. So, one may wonder, what are these people doing, these Hare Krishna people, sitting around talking this philosophy? And they could be watching the World Cup. What are they? Why are they spending their time like this? Are they crazy? Are they brainwashed? Are they insane? Or what's going on here anyway? Actually, devotees are the ultimate connoisseurs of enjoyment. There's enjoyment in the mode of ignorance. There's enjoyment in the mode of passion. Enjoyment in the mode of goodness, and there is transcendental enjoyment also. Devotees are not fools, actually. Devotees are the most enlightened people in the whole universe. They understand, why should I go after some pleasure which is misery in the beginning and misery in the end? That's happiness in the mode of ignorance. Or some happiness which is nectar in the beginning and poison in the end, that's happiness in the mode of passion. Happiness in the mode of goodness is pretty good. That's poison in the beginning and nectar at the end. And that leads to the highest platform of happiness, transcendental happiness, pure happiness, which is nectar in the beginning and nectar in the ever-increasing nectar. So the devotees are the actual connoisseurs. By their connection with the supreme enjoyer, Krishna, they also become supreme enjoyers. They relish like anything. Actually, devotees are blissed out 24 hours a day, 27 days a week, in all times, places, and circumstances. The devotee is always in a state of transcendental bliss. Even if the material energy is not looking so good. Yesterday, one devotee said, oh, it's a down economy right now. But there's always going to be ups and downs. There's no such thing as an economy which is always up. It's not possible. This is the material nature. This is the world of sukha dukkha. Why do you think we have day and night? Why do you think we have winter and summer? There's no such thing as an economy that always goes up, up, up. It doesn't happen in this material world. It doesn't. It's impossible. It's against the laws of nature. There's always going to be up and down, up and down. That is the nature of material existence. But do we want to go up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down? No, we do not want to go up and down. That's not our nature. We want to go constantly up. So that should tell us something. That this world of up and down is not the place where we should try to get our satisfaction. We should intelligently analyze these and understand there's a misfit situation going on here. There's a square peg trying to go into a round hole. It doesn't fit. Something's wrong. We have to step back from this thing and say, wait a minute, what's going on here? Let's make an adjustment. Let's find a way to get to that consciousness, which is always, you see. When one is serious to find that state of consciousness, which becomes completely 100% free from all types of suffering, all types of ignorance, all types of confusion and illusion, when one is ready for that consciousness, you see, seriously ready, yes, I want that, that is more important to me than anything else, you see, then you're ready for spiritual mastery. Until then, you're not ready, you see. Until then, you're not ready for a spiritual master. Until then, well, the guru will be a pet. I try to use him for my sense enjoyment. That doesn't work. When we realize any attempts to enjoy in this material existence are simply shrama eva hi kevalam, a useless waste of time, as described in the Bhagavatam, first canto. As soon as we come to that understanding, then we must seriously take up the Vedic injunction, the tato brahma jigyasa. Now you have a human form, you must utilize it to understand who you are, where you've come from, what is the ultimate purpose of your existence, and how you can achieve that perfection of your existence. That's it. What's that called? Human life. What's the absence of that call? Animal life. You may be very nicely decorated in your apartment with your late model automobile, your iPhone, your iPad. You may be very nicely decorated, but you are simply animal. Simply animal. If you have not taken this pathway to awaken your divine consciousness, you are simply animal. Sorry if I stepped on any toes, but it's my duty to tell the truth. I have to tell the truth. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, told me the truth, and it's my duty to tell you the truth also. If you're not serious to awaken that divine consciousness within you, that unlimitedly knowledgeable, blissful state of enlightened consciousness known as Krishna consciousness, if you're not serious to awaken that, well, you're a lost soul. What can I say? You're just a lost, bewildered, confused person who's not going anywhere. Just like a dog chasing his tail. You ever seen that? A dog chase his tail before? They go in circles. Oh, he wants to get his tail. He keeps escaping him. He keeps going for it. He's spinning around trying to catch his tail. You see? If we don't take this pathway of liberation out of this cycle of birth and death, we are simply dogs chasing our tails. Nothing else. Simply dancing dogs, you see. So if you're happy being a dancing dog, well, more power to you. But I wasn't satisfied with such a life. You know. They said, well, boy, you just got to go to college, you know. Do well, get good grades, get a good job, get a wife, get a house, get a car, get some kids. And what's the result? In the U.S., they have a retirement community in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. All the senior citizens, you know, tons, it's loaded with, you know, at the end, well, I get to go to look. They have a game called shuffleboard, the old senior citizens play, you know. And I was thinking, the only result of all this, you know, excelling in college and excelling in the workplace and getting a good income and a good house and a good wife and some good kids and a fantastic dog and a beautiful goldfish. If the ultimate result of all of this is simply to go to Fort Lauderdale, you know, and push a shuffleboard around until they finally bury me 6 feet under and I get flowers on my grave once a year until they forget about me, what's the point? What is the point of doing this? It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. So I said, what do you want to major in, boy? I couldn't decide. First tell me whom I am, Professor so-and-so, and then ask me what I want to major in, you see. First, tell me who I am. You can't even tell me who I am. You want me to know what I'm going to major in? Majoring in something doesn't make sense unless I know who I am. You see? I took so many courses, and no course could tell me who I am. We had one course called BS. No kidding, it's called BS. BS 101, 102, 201, and 202. We took four semesters of BS, and it was simply BS. Bullstool. Because it didn't tell us, it was the study of the whole Western civilization. We started off, it's such a joke. The study of the world history, and we started off with the Tigris and the Euphrates. Can you imagine? Iraq, yeah. We started off in Iraq. That's the cradle of modern civilization, Iraq, you see. There was no knowledge whatsoever of the Vedic culture. Absolutely none. It didn't even exist in the history books that we studied, the Vedic culture. It all began with the Tigris and the Euphrates, you see, the cradle of modern-day civilization. What a joke. We studied the Greek philosophers. Socrates was pretty good. Prabhupada did say he was pretty good, because he knew he wasn't his body. You know why Socrates was good? You know why he had that knowledge? Because the Greek philosophers, they were descendants of Indian Brahmins, actually. The Greek and Roman civilizations were started by two sons of a Vedic king, an Indian king. They went to Greek and Rome and started their empires there. So they're actually spin-offs of the Vedic culture. So we see in the early Greek philosophers, before Aristotle introduced empirical science, basing things on the senses, the imperfect senses. We see they have the idea of accepting, what the previous teachers passed down. They talked about reincarnation, vegetarianism, these kind of things. And when they wanted to, Socrates was constantly challenging the absurdities of modern day, then modern day Athenian culture. He was challenging the whole basis of the people were accepting things as true. Very heavily challenging the whole philosophical basis, speculative, imperfect basis of that society in Athens. And he was such a pinprick in the side of the Athenian society that they decided to put him to death. They got some hemlock poison. Said, okay, Socrates, before you drink it, tell us how you want to be buried. He said, well, you're going to have to catch me first. He knew he wasn't his body, you see. So Prabhupada said he was a great philosopher, Socrates. But after that, Plato faithfully repeated what he had heard from his teacher Socrates. But then the next one in the line, Aristotle, he completely went towards empiricism. Instead of basing things on what you've heard from previous authorities, which what Plato was doing and Socrates was doing, which is a watered-down version of the Parampara system, it was still maintained to a certain degree. But Aristotle went completely into empiricism and opened up the door for the modern-day degraded materialistic society. Philosophically, Aristotle is the one who opened the door for it. So we studied we studied the Greek philosophers, we studied the Roman philosophers, the Europeans, the existentialists, and it was simply garbage. Nobody could tell me who I am. Nobody could tell me who I am. But then I found a university that was giving them knowledge. Hare Krishna University. Giving the ultimate knowledge. Raja Vija Rajago Yam Paritamida Muktavam Pakrashavagamam Taranyam Shushukam Katamam Yam. The Supreme Professor, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Prabhupada is giving perfect knowledge, not just some dry academic gobbledygook. But realized knowledge. What does that mean? Realized knowledge means the realized devotee, he can see Krishna It's not some theoretical idea. Well, I think there's Krishna because so-and-so told me there's... No, he sees Krishna 24/7. By dint of purified senses, he can perceive Krishna directly, face-to-face. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena santaksadaiva hridayesha valokayanti yang shamashundaram achinya gunasvarupam govindam adipurusham tamaham pajami. He can directly see God. You ask him, well, do you believe in God? Ha ha ha. The atheists like to ask that question. Do you believe in God? What kind of weirdo are you? No, I don't believe in God. I associate with him at every minute. So you ask some woman, do you believe in your husband? Or ask a husband, do you believe in your wife? What do you mean, do I believe in my husband or wife? I'm associating with them 24 hours a day. What do you mean, do I believe in them? It's a crazy question. So that you believe in God is a crazy question. It's a ridiculous, crazy question. Do you believe in God? It's a stupid question. I'm associating with God 24 hours. There's no question of believing in God. I'm living with Him constantly, 24/7. You see, that is the position of a devotee. You see, that's a devotee's position. So we have to actually take advantage of this mercy coming from the great acharyas, Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta. These great acharyas have very carefully handed down this knowledge, the scientific system where you can directly experience God at every minute. Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhava Tu Me. Jagannath Swami, please come to my vision, Lord of the universe. Can you imagine seeing God face to face 24 hours a day? Directly perceiving Him. You see, this is Krishna consciousness. This science of Krishna consciousness brings you to that stage. Those are the very first words I heard from Prabhupada's mouth when I was in His physical presence. Of course, I heard so many things through the tapes and the books, but when I was actually in Prabhupada's physical presence, the very first word that came out of His mouth was Jagana. Jagana Tashami Nayana Patagami Bhavatume. He was giving a wonderful lecture about how we can see God 24 hours a day. You see. Even in our beginning stage, us, even we struggling neophytes, you see, we can experience God even instantly, immediately. What does Krishna say? Raso ham apsukanteya pravashmi shashashuryaya panava sarve deshu shamnake varashamnashu. O son of Kunti, I am the taste of water. Prabhupada said, you are, how many times you're drinking water? Once, twice, thrice, more than that every day. He said, he told us that every time you drink water, you remember that Krishna is the taste of the water. Then immediately you become Krishna conscious. Krishna. See how easy it is? Krishna. So all you have to do when you drink some water, remember, oh, this is Krishna. Sometimes we take things for granted. He says, I'm the light of the sun. We take light for granted. But we were blessed the other day. Of course, the electricity is a manifestation of the sun's energy also, electrical energy. The other day we were here, blessed at the Melbourne Temple. Somebody came to see me, very nice gentleman, Akhilesh. He came to see me. The lights went completely out. It was nighttime, it was pitch black, we couldn't see anything. Finally, I found the flashlight. So we take light for granted, you see. But then when it's gone, you know, we think, oh, light, no big deal. But when it's actually gone and it comes back, then you realize, actually, this light is a very valuable thing. To be had illumination, to be actually see things around me, it's a very, very valuable gift. And that illuminating power is Krishna. You see. We take water for granted, but I guarantee if you're wandering in the desert and you're on the verge of death and somebody brings you water, oh, water. Thank God. You see? So we have to not we have to remind ourselves not to take these things for granted. Water, light, heat, the basic necessities of life, they are all coming by Krishna's mercy. So we have to learn how to feel gratitude for what Krishna is providing us at every minute and show our gratitude by devoting ourselves to Him. If you don't do that, what are you doing? If you take the electricity from your electricity company here in Melbourne, you don't pay your bill, what happens? Cut. Let me see. Just like Papa gave the example in New York City, they have Con Edison. If you don't pay your Con Edison bill, then, yeah, they turn off your electricity. You see. So why do you think the modern day society is floundering with so many problems? Now the Gulf of Mexico is completely polluted with oil. The global warming is just one thing after another. Terrorism, economic problems, disease, drought. I mean, it's just one problem stacked upon another problem. How many problems are we going to have? Major problems are we going to have facing the human society? You thought, well, two or three. Now there's five or six, and there's seven or eight. It just keeps stacking higher and higher. This mountain of problems. And very, very difficult problems in the modern society trying to survive in the face of all these problems, you see. Why? Why are there so many problems? This is not natural. In the Vedic times, everything was beautiful and wonderful. The air was clean, the water was clean, the climate was wonderful, there was fruits and flowers growing luxuriantly everywhere. The people were living happily, they didn't have to worry about locking their house. We were just in South Africa. They thought, oh yeah, we'll get rid of apartheid and make this a wonderful country. And now, people have to make their houses into virtual fortresses with bars everywhere, thick bars everywhere, and barbed wire even. In a suburban neighborhood, can you imagine a suburban neighborhood with barbed wire everywhere? You see, that's what in South Africa we just experienced then, you see. So-called improved, you know, getting rid of apartheid and improving the country. Now there's barbed wire in suburbia. Everywhere, barbed wire in suburbia. You know, so if somebody tries to cross your fence, they get cut. So why are we having all these difficulties? Why is the material world becoming more and more and more problematic? Because we're not paying our Con Edison bill. That's why. That's why. We're not paying our electric bill. I mean to say, we're not showing Krishna our appreciation for everything He's giving us. We're simply taking it, and we're not paying our bill. And what is the bill paying? Yajna, perform sacrifice. Anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyo anasambhavah chagad bhaviti tarjanyo yajna karma samudbhavah. All living entities subsist on grains, and grains are produced by the rain, which is produced by yajna, and yajna is born of prescribed duty. So we have a duty to perform yajna, and to perform sacrifice. And the sacrifice in this age is the congregational chanting of the holy name, Sankirtan yajna. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We have a duty. That's how we show the Lord our appreciation for everything He's giving us. That's how we pay our electric bill. So we chant Hare Krishna. And if you have a society that refuses to glorify God, that even denies His very existence, you see, then what you can expect? What you can expect to come? Drought, famine, global warming, oil spills, one thing after another. Aya Fyatna Yukut, you know that one? That volcano that shut down. We were stranded in Europe because of the volcanic eruption. No planes could fly. That Aya Fyatla Yukut was spewing off and filling the air. So there's so many problems going on because we aren't paying our dues. We're not paying our electric bill. But if one will realize, I have a duty, I have an obligation to reciprocate the love the Supreme Person is giving to me at every minute by giving Him my love in return, what happens to such a person? He becomes completely blessed and blissed out 24 hours a day. Krishna gives him everything he needs. He doesn't have to worry about anything. All he has to do is keep himself absorbed in devotional service 24 hours a day. And then everything falls into place beautifully, wonderfully, by the grace of that all powerful, all beautiful, all renounced, all knowledgeable, all wealthy, and all famous Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is called by millions and billions of names, the chief of which is Krishna. So do you want to be connected with Krishna? Or do you want to be disconnected from Krishna? It's your choice. We make that decision at every minute by our every thought, our every word, and our every deed. I either connect myself with Krishna or I disconnect from Krishna. You may have a very nice lamp, but if it's not plugged into the power, it's useless. You have a very good body, very good intelligence, very good bank balance, very nice wife, very nice husband, very nice car, very nice kids, but if it's not connected with Krishna, you are nowhere. Simply nowhere. That's it. And whatever your position in this material world is, pauper, prime minister, whatever you may be, if you are connected with Krishna, then you're perfectly situated. So now you make your choice. Do you want to be connected with Krishna or disconnected from Krishna? And if you want to connect with Krishna, He will give you all help. He will give you a spiritual master. He will give you the holy names. He will give you prasadam. He will give you deities. He will give you devotee association. He will give you books of Vedic knowledge. If you want to connect with Krishna, He will give you all facility. So this is the sum and substance of our Krishna consciousness movement. Now I can ask if there's any questions. How do you stay connected? Yad karoshi yadasnasi yanjahosi dadasi yat tapashashi konteya tat kadusha madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, as well as whatever austerities you make reforms, it is working your job. Do that as Sanat Kunti, as an offering unto me. So how do you offer your job to Krishna? That mean, what is the result of your job? You get paid, right? So whose money is it? Is it your money? Or is it Krishna's money? If you think, oh, it's my money, now I can enjoy, then you're disconnected, you're not connected. You think, oh, this is Krishna's money, I have to spend every penny of this money in a way which is satisfying to Krishna. Then you're connected. It's a simple thing. Every penny is Krishna's money. You have to remember that. He's giving you this money to use in His service. You have to see how I can maximize this money for Krishna's service, every penny of it. And then you're perfectly connected. Whether you're a brahmacharya living in the temple, or you're a householder earning a livelihood. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, now I work my job to maintain Krishna's household. His household was not a place, was not a dark well, it was an ashram, a place of spiritual cultivation. It produced Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, his household life. You see. So one is a married man, he has to make his home an ashram. He has where pure bhakti is being cultivated and taught to all the members of the family. You see. So in this way, by even maintaining your own house, your own family life, if you're married, I don't know. But this is an example. By using every penny in the service of Krishna, then that work becomes transcendental activity. You know, it may appear to be a mundane job, XYZ corporation, because you're And now you're engaging that corporation in the service of Krishna if you spend that money for Krishna. Any other questions? Okay, all right. Whose hand went up first? All right, we'll go with you. Hear a word of it, so maybe hopefully you heard
it. Okay. So he's saying when you go to job or walking in the streets or whatever, or in the desk, you know, you have a bad aroma of meat.
A third?
Bad
aroma of meat?
Meat, fish, and all that kind of thing. So we feel pain about it, but then how to avoid that thing? How to get away from it?
You can't really avoid it, you just have to. You're sitting on the airplane, that's where you're really stuck, you know. You're sitting on the airplane, of course we don't eat the prasadam, I mean the food that they give, we bring our own prasadam. And then, you know, we're sitting there enjoying the prasadam and they serve out the meat, everybody around us is like, you're in the middle of a crematorium, you know. It's a horrible Everywhere there's meat and you're trapped in a little tiny airplane compartment with all these people gobbling up their rotting flesh, you know. What are you supposed to do? I mean, all you can do is tolerate it and think, well, we got to close down these slaughterhouses. You know, Prabhupada said the first business of a devotee is to stop this violence. So you should understand, I should live my life in such a way to do everything I possibly can to completely close down these slaughterhouses. If you smell the stench of meat, you think, okay, I have to do something to stop it. I mean, just a mundane example, when Gandhi was thrown off the train in South Africa. So he said, I have to end this discrimination. He devoted his whole life to that and he drove the British out of India, you see. Because he was so disturbed by being thrown off the train. So you should be so disturbed by the smell of meat that you dedicate your whole life to closing the slaughterhouses by spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. Just like Gandhi. A mundane example, but Gandhi was so dedicated. This is such an insult. It's such a great injustice that because I have an Indian body, I'm thrown off the train, you see. So we should think, this is such a great injustice that these poor creatures are being slaughtered. I'm smelling it's a horrible thing. I have to dedicate my whole life to fight this nonsense, to stop it. In this way, you see. You should get energy from them. That horrible experience of smelling the meat should energize you to become even more dedicated to cutting down the slaughterhouses. You understand? Spiritual revolutionaries, ki jai. Okay. Next question. That means you have to be a preacher, Prabhu. Okay.
Use the income.
Okay.
For buying things which is not offerable to Krishna, just like a family-made bread and things like that.
Well, that's practical. Like somebody may go out and say, "Well, you know, I'm in a rush in the morning. I got to get my round done, and so I'll just get some Kellogg's cornflakes and have that for breakfast every day." It's, you know, many devotees have. I've seen. I've been in many homes, and many devotees have things like cornflakes. But it's just a matter of making a slight adjustment, because anybody who wants, I can send you the recipe for Radha Damodar Granola. you can make from scratch, which is billions of times more tasty than any cornflakes you can ever get from Kellogg's. You can make a whole big container of it, like once every 2 weeks or even once a month, make a huge thing of it. You know, take one Saturday once a month and make a big batch of granola, and then every morning you have this incredible, delicious, made by a devotee from scratch for Krishna granola, which is just the most delicious thing, and you'll never even think about Kellogg's cornflakes ever again. Send me an email, I'll give you the recipe. Radha Damodar, secret granola. Really good. Okay. Anything else? Or ice cream. You can make your own ice cream. Don't buy Karmi ice cream. Make your own. Prabhupada said, actually, we shouldn't eat the ice cream made by non-devotees. We can make our own ice cream. Not difficult. Huh? There's no need. We can make our own ice cream. There's no need to buy Karmi ice cream I've seen sometimes like somebody's Vyasa Puja, they go out and buy a huge ton of Karmi ice cream. We can make our own ice cream. Not difficult. Get a little ice cream machine. You can easily make ice cream. Anything else?
So is that Lakshmi, when we buy things from Karmis, would that be considered as that we have spent in Krishna's service?
Well, there are certain things. I mean, Prabhupada, we know that Yerapad took puffies that were made by non-devotees. We just have to study what Prabhupada told us and what Prabhupada did to see where to draw the line. He would take puffies made by, you know, outsiders. I never heard devotees knew how to make puffies out of rice. They would take them. So we just have to see what we can understand, because we have the ideal Acharya who came and showed us by example how to be Krishna conscious. So we can just study what Prabhupada did, what Prabhupada said, and understand where to draw the line. Simple thing. We are blessed because, you know, how do you apply the rules and regulations? If there's no Acharya, you'll never figure it out. We require the presence of an Acharya so we can actually see how to properly apply the rules and regulations of the Vedas in a practical way that works, you see. That's why a living guru is essential. So we have Prabhupada here. Prabhupada so mercifully has come to teach us how to do that, and even though he's physically gone now, there are many witnesses to his pastime, and we can all witness the videos and the audio tapes and the so many lectures and conversations. It's all available for everyone to study and to gain an incredible insight from Srila Prabhupada on how we can live practically in a Krishna conscious way in a materialistic society. Anything else? Yes.
Srila Gurudev, I've got a related question to food being prepared by Karmi. Like, if we sign that we don't use the cornflakes, for instance, prepared by the Karmi, but sometimes the ingredients we might have to use in the bhoga that we are preparing for Krishna might still be prepared by the Karmi.
Like sugar.
Like
sugar is prepared by Karmi.
And
even the raw ingredients we use, even the flour is made by Karmi. So that's why we have to see what Prabhupada. That's why you could go crazy thinking, well, I have to be completely pure. This flour is made by Karmi. Unless I can take the wheat and grind it myself, I can't even use flour. I can't use sugar unless I process it myself in the sugar cane. You know, so that's why we have a pure devotee, so we can see where to draw the line. What's practical, yeah.
Isn't it said that by cooking on the fire, it becomes purified, because the pure fire is purifying.
That's true. It's like the puffies, we don't eat them raw, we actually take them, you roast them in the fire a little bit. That processing by a devotee of actually cooking it with love for Krishna, That does purify the puppies, for example.
But like buying cornflakes and bread and pizza and all those things, we are not doing anything. We're just eating directly.
Oh, follow.
Like there are devotees who eat cornflakes, pizza, bread.
From non-devotees.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make any sense to eat crummy bread when you can get a bread machine and make your own bread easily at home nowadays. It's easy. You can have your own wonderful bread high out of the oven made for Krishna in Krishna's kitchen. You're a Christian. Every householder's home should be a Krishna's kitchen. Prabhupada did actually say that there's something about yeast, but Prabhupada said the devotees in Germany, it's recorded in that book. There's a book about Prabhupada in Germany. He told the devotees they could make yeast bread for travelings in kirtan. So there's some controversies about different things, but he did say that yeast bread could be used for the devotees who were preaching, traveling and preaching. Anything else? Okay then, let's get out and save the world. Close the slaughterhouses, close the abortion clinics, by preaching, not by bombs, by preaching. Yantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.